Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
I'm Ryan McCaffrey from IGN. Welcome to another episode of IGN Unfiltered, my monthly interview series where I sit down with the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the game field. This month, my guest is Stig Asmussen, the game director on Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Bring your lightsabers. It's time to talk some Star Wars. But he's also a game director from the God of War series back on the PS2, PS3 era. Lots to talk about. Enjoy. So, Stig, how did you get started with games? That's always my first question. I always like to know sort of the superhero origin story of all these wonderful game creators.
So definitely not a
where did
superhero
start for
origin
you?
Story. Well, I was always a gamer. I love playing games on different systems. I started on, like, TRS-80 computer. Like,
nice.
Space Invaders on it. Had an Apple. I think the Sega Master System was the first, like, console that I had.
Yes.
And then I got the Nintendo after that, which at the time just had way more games. It was awesome. But at the same time, I was always into art.
Yeah.
And took all the different classes I could in middle school and high school, and ended up going to college for architecture. And found out really quickly that, like, architecture really wasn't my thing. So I dropped out. But I kept on playing games.
What turned you off to architecture? Was there, like, a sort of a specific moment where you had to?
Yeah, there's. I mean, I liked creating structures, but there was these things called math and science that, like, you know, anything that I created wouldn't practically work on Earth.
Yeah, wouldn't adhere to the laws of physics.
No, unfortunately not. But actually, it turns out to be a good thing because I found out that you could do all this cool world building inside video games that you couldn't do in the real world.
Yeah.
And there used to be this, I don't know if you remember Next Generation magazine.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I used to get that, and they advertised this art school in Pittsburgh, and I wasn't doing anything except for playing video games and bartending.
Yeah.
At the time. And my parents were like, when are you going to, you know, find yourself? And early 20s. And I ended up going to art school, and I did really well. I really enjoyed 3D animation and 3D modeling, and ended up getting a job straight out of art school at Atari, of all places.
Well, let's back up for a second, though, because you press fast forward real quick right there. Were you sitting around just, like, drawing game characters and video game stuff and notebooks in school all the time, or what was sort of the sort of genesis of extending the love of games and combining it with art?
I think it was more this thing that, like, it had taken over. Playing games had taken over such a large part of my life. I had an art background, but I wasn't really doing anything with it. And I saw this opportunity to do something. To me, it seemed like, you know, video games might as well be being made up on the North Pole.
Yeah.
By elves or something like that. It seemed like this magical thing. I just went to the store. I bought one. I got to play it. And I didn't really see that there was actually a business behind it until... Mm-hmm. I started reading this magazine, and which was a little bit more of kind of like a experts magazine that gave you kind of the inside story sometimes. And when I saw this opportunity that there's, like, hey, this school is actually saying that they can teach me the skills to learn how to get into this industry.
Yeah.
That was, everything just kind of came together at that point.
So that was, like, sort of the late 90s equivalent of, like, the Full Sail ads that we see in game magazines and stuff now, where it's like specific kind of game-oriented education.
Yeah. It's exactly the same thing.
What were some of your favorite games as kids? Because you mentioned, you know, you had the Master System and then the NES. What were some of your classics from your childhood?
I mean, right off the bat, I would say Atari classics, things like Centipede, Paperboy, Gauntlet was huge for me in the arcade.
Yes.
Commando, Ikari Warriors. I loved Splatterhouse. I loved arcade games. When I like was playing console games at home, Contra, up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, B, A, B, A. I was able to beat the game before I got that code.
Yeah. That's
so
impressive. Contra was a tough game.
I believe there was a time when I could beat that game without dying. I mean, Metal Gear.
Well, suddenly Jedi Fallen Order makes a lot more sense, that you're pushing yourself through the Contra grind early on.
Contra, Castlevania, Metal Gear, Zelda, Metroid, Super Metroid, all those games.
You ran through all the classics.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. So you mentioned kind of wandering aimlessly a bit, in a sense, after high school, before you found your way to Pittsburgh and the art school. So what was...
It wasn't aimless. I was learning...
Fair enough.
I was learning that I didn't want to sit behind a bar all the time and serve people drinks and clean up and be there until 2 o'clock in the morning. That was really hard work. I wanted to do something that was going to be more thought intensive.
What did you originally want to be when you grew up, either as a kid or even a little later before art came calling?
Like I said, I was really interested in architecture. Before that, I don't know. I think that was the thing that the first thing that really started speaking to me. I'd say that's it.
So your dad, if I read up correctly, was very much in the sciences. He was sort of on the sciencey side.
Wait, you did your homework.
Yeah, when your Wikipedia page is fairly thin, but there are a few interesting nuggets there, and dig up what I can.
Yeah, I don't know who added this stuff about my dad. It might have been him.
Well, you never know. That's the point of Wikipedia, right? Anybody can jump in there. But as somebody who did then go into the arts, when you tell them, hey, I want to go to art school in Pittsburgh, are they super supportive at that point?
You know, I think if I had straight out of high school made that request, I don't think they would have been as supportive. But at this point, like I said, I was in my early 20s and they just wanted me to get on with my life.
Yeah.
And it seemed like something that I was really, like, for the first time in a while, I was really driven and like, this is something I want to do. I want to get out of this city that I'm living in, and I want to go explore another, place. And, they were super supportive of it. I think still to this date, my family doesn't, really get video games.
Several crazy successful games, it's still kind of
I think they get that there's like a whole, population of fans across the world that this is something that they're into, but I mean, just like anything else, you really have to commit yourself to it and engage to it to really understand it.
But we'll talk a lot more about Jedi Fallen Order in a bit, but has Jedi Fallen Order even changed that? Because it's Star Wars.
Right. Well, that's the interesting thing is they don't really get Star Wars either. So, I mean, I think everybody, I went to see it with my parents in the late 70s, but that was kind of like, that was it for them at that point. Because everybody went to see the A New Hope. But it's like, once again, it's something that Star Wars is even bigger. It's like the biggest thing, right? And they recognize that there's people that, are into it, but that's just nothing that ever struck them. But at the same time, though, they were always supportive for the things that I was interested in.
So when you get to art school, you start to find your calling. You're kind of finding your
purpose.
Your purpose, yeah. So do you kind of feel that in the moment? Like, man, I'm really into this. This is what I want to be doing. Or accidentally lead to games.
I think there was I'm at art school now and this is the thing that I'm doing. And there's still this dream that's out there that like, and for me, it was always, I'm going to move out to California.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a job out in California. And it's like, first I want to like, hopefully get a job in games. If I can't, maybe I can get a job in film or commercials or something like that, doing computer graphics. But as I'm at school, I've got my headphones on and I'm just into the thing that I'm doing. So for me, it was always kind of, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next project that I'm working on in school? And like, I had kind of committed myself to something back then that I still do to this day. And that's that every time I do something new, I'm going to try to do it better than the last thing that I did.
Yeah.
And if I don't do it, then I'm not going to feel good about myself because I didn't, put my greatest effort into it. And I don't feel like I really learned something at that point. And that's kind of the greatest thing that I learned, I think, from art school. It wasn't so much the technical part of it, but this kind of,
the work ethic.
The work ethic and kind of this personal accountability and responsibility.
So let's now walk me through getting to that first game development job after you finish. Because you said right out of that art school, you landed a job.
Yeah, I mean, it probably took about 6 months. I mean, maybe a little bit long. Yeah, I think it was about 6 months of like interviewing at different places, which was another learning experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sorry, where were we going with this?
Was it Atari?
It was Atari.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool because you started playing games as a kid. You played Atari as a kid, so that's got to be kind of neat for you, right?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, one of my first bosses was the guy that... God, all this is kind of crazy. First game, really real game I got to work at Atari was Gauntlet. Legends.
Oh, that's
the arcade
perfect.
Game, which was the reboot yeah. of the arcade game, which was one of my favorite arcade games of all
yes.
time. And I didn't even know that going in there because they hired me for a different game. And this is when we were still just doing arcade games there.
Right.
And I was there for like maybe a month and they canceled that game and they ended up laying off. This is back when teams had like 8 or 9 people.
Yeah.
They laid off half the team, but for some reason they ended up keeping me and putting me over on Gauntlet, which I was just like, well, this is where I wanted to be the whole time. And so that was the first game, but my boss working on that, he had developed, one of my favorite classics, which is Paperboy.
I love that game.
And the game that he made before that was the original vector graphics Star Wars game. So here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. You've found a way to come full circle on a lot of things, haven't you?
Yeah. And later on I got to work on a game there with, the person who developed the original Gauntlet, and also Asteroids and Missile Command. So it was a great place to work with like these game legends and learning the stories of the time, like back when Atari was, you know, the hottest shit.
Yeah.
It was a great. It was amazing. I interviewed at, I guess at the time, places that might have been. In fact, I think I interviewed at EA at the time, and they turned me down. But maybe at the time would be considered more high profile. But for me to go there and work with all these legends was unbelievable. It was a dream come true. And I got to move out to California too. I always said I was going to be out
the
in
box,
California.
Yeah.
So it was Northern California. I think for me at the time, the difference between California was just California, and I didn't realize there was such a big difference between Northern and Southern.
I think a lot of people don't realize, like, they get here and they think, you know, oh, it's going to be warm. Like, no,
right.
Not here.
Right, right,
not
exactly.
In Northern California. Paperboy, man, that's another game. That was a pretty tough game,
too. It
was
really hard.
Yeah, you seem to be drawn to a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot easier when you just got it sitting in the studio and you don't have to keep on feeding it quarters.
That's true. How has that game not been remade? Of like, there's been so many remakes of a lot of the classics, but no Paperboy remake.
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe somebody will do it someday.
I think you should get the rights. I think you should take a crack at this if this whole Star Wars thing doesn't pan out.
Make the 20-hour Paperboy, like, third-person action-adventure game. Or...
Of course, what's crazy is there aren't even Paperboys anymore.
Right.
It's a dead
profession.
Nobody
even know what it is.
You're like, what? you mean you just press email to everyone on that subscribed to the mailing list? That's all you got to do? That's the game? All right, so take me to then landing at Sony in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And take me to God of War.
Okay, so, working, I loved it at Atari. It was we transitioned from arcade games to working on PlayStation 1, Nintendo 64, and PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
And I did a couple games on PlayStation 2. During that time, Atari ended up getting bought by Midway.
That's right.
So I actually got to work for Midway too, which was kind of cool. And Midway was making some of the best decisions across their entire portfolio, and they had to they ran into some financial issues and ended up shutting our studio down. And I remember it was funny, but my boss told me at one point, he's like, "Sig, you're never going to have to worry about losing your job here unless the studio shuts down." And then about a year later, the studio shuts down. And I freaked out. Like, I was like, this is my thing. This is my gig. This is like, I had worked so hard to get this job. And now I have to go through this whole interviewing thing again. And like, last time I did it, it took half a year. And like, you know, everything that I've saved up, you know, financially and everything, I'm going to lose.
You don't want to move back home at that point.
Don't want to move back home. Yeah. I just wanted a job.
Yeah.
Like, and I wanted one quickly. I interviewed with Namco and Cryptic Studios.
Yeah.
And
down here in the South Bay, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, both of those were down in like kind of Milpitas area. And I also I had a headhunter reach out to me about a Sony job down in Santa Monica. And part of me was like, you know, I've been down to LA a couple times since I've moved over to California. I like it down there. It's something that I'd like the opportunity to live in Southern California just to see, you know, the difference.
Sure.
And I said, yeah, sure. And she kind of talked up this game that they were making, which hadn't been announced yet. And she made it sound like, you know, this is the biggest game Sony's like working on right now. And you just got to come down and see it. And I came down and checked it out. And at the time, it was called Dark Odyssey. And it was about this Greek guy.
God of War is a much better title.
yeah. Well, there's actually some funny stories about that. But his name was Dominus at the time, I believe. And I met with a couple people on the team, a couple of the artists. One of them, Ken Feldman, who I still work with right now. He's one of the art directors on our Jedi team. Been working with him ever since. And I was like, this game's incredible. And it reminded me of, you know, games that I had grown up, like Rygar, and Castlevania.
Sure.
And it was beautiful. And I was like, I gotta take this job. And they gave me an offer on the spot.
Wow.
And I had these other ones as well, too. And then it was basically, at the time, convincing my wife, who at the time was my girlfriend, to move down to Southern California with me, which wasn't...
That's a big ask.
It is. You know, she supported it. And we've since gotten married and had children, so that all worked out well. it was just this amazing game and moving down with an amazing studio that, like, at the time had, like, you know, I think 25, 30 people on it. And I went there and I started building environments for this game. And it was the interesting thing too, is like when coming from Atari and Midway and even early on God of War, environment artists and we were also kind of like doing level design as well too. So I kind of had
this. You learned a lot then.
Yeah. Like it's, so it wasn't like just like you get put in and you're just an artist and you're building arts of these like already designed like shells of levels. We were doing the shells as well too. So I still got to do some of that stuff on God of War as well. Since then, we started
specializing
stuff a little bit more because the games got bigger and bigger. I mean, my first games I was working on had like 10 people on them, and then, you know, now we're up to like 150. Some teams have like 300, 400. Sure. And that's not including outsourcing or any of that stuff. But loved it working on God of War. It was an amazing game. We were talking about the name at the time. It was called Dark Odyssey. Team really liked that for a while.
Yeah.
Kratos' name was Dominus. And I remember when those two names became what they were that we now know as Kratos and God of War. I think God of War was something that was born out of marketing. I might be wrong about that, but it was a lot of us in the team were like, the hell is that? This sounds like, you know, some
like a strategy game.
No, it sounds like some game about just murdering people, which
well,
but I mean, but it sounded like too on the nose to a certain extent to people that don't really get the kind of Greek mythology side of things to it. It sounds like it could just be like some game where you're going in the arcade game where you're going in and kicking ass or something. So it took some of us a little bit like. For that to grow on us, and I think that was definitely the best decision. In terms of the name Kratos, there's an interesting story. David Jaffe, who was the director on God of War, put it out to the team. Hey, anybody got any cool ideas for what the name of this character can be?
Yeah,
and everybody would just send emails or whatever, and I think those emails went forward on to marketing, and they kind of picked who they thought the top choices would be. So I put down, you know, Stig Asmussen or I put down Stig and I like, these are the names. And I put down like five or six different names. And when they came back, they had five names and Kratos was one of them, but Stig was one of them. and the reason why is because they just saw Stig
and then they just saw a few,
and they thought that was one of them. So, we went with Kratos. I think that was the right idea as well, too.
Well, maybe if Corey Barlock's listening, Come on, we got an opportunity here. It's not too late. I'm sure no one would notice if we just changed the name for next time.
Yeah, I think, let's give it a shot.
Fine. You mentioned kind of learning level design, if not sort of deliberately, almost sort of by osmosis in your early role. That's in hindsight, kind of helps lay the groundwork for your skills as a game director that would come later too.
Yeah, I think especially back in the day, working as an environment artist, you got to have your hands in a lot of different things. It's just getting a level up and running requires you to be in lockstep with pretty much every single department, because it's great percentage of what the player is doing is how they're contacting with the world.
So real quick, before I move on, I want to ask you, growing up on all these games that you love, and then you get to work on a lot of them and a lot of those properties. The first time that you saw your name in the credits of a game, how did that just make you feel awesome?
Yeah. I think actually it was the first time I saw my name on the internet that was a bigger deal, or that I saw it in a magazine.
Yeah.
But seeing it in the credits, I don't, because since it was an arcade game and the credits roll all the time.
Right.
That was neat, but it's like, oh, you see it the first time and it's then months later, it's in the arcade and it's kind of gone away. Whereas when you work on games nowadays, they're the very last thing that are put in the games, and you beat the game and you see that, and there's a certain amount of accomplishment to that. I will say though, back in the day, Midway Games is all about having like big head modes in games.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers.
We got to bring those back. But
you could do that.
We could.
We could have, big headed Jedi, just saying.
I believe we've had some conversations with Lucasfilm about it. And
I'm sure those go well.
Actually, I think they were pretty open to it.
All right. Well, we'll look for that in a future update.
It was on a Gauntlet Dark Legacy. We made back then you put the quarter in and then you could put in like a little code and it would remember your player profile. Or it would bring up, if you put in a special code, it would bring up a special player profile that couldn't be owned. And if you put in PNK666, you got to play as a Mohawk, green Mohawk version, a big head version of me with a chainsaw. And then there was STG333 was, you could play I had a steel baseball bat and it was just like more normal Stig kind of thing.
Yeah, but it was like when they were doing, hiding, George Clinton and NBA Jam and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
That kind of thing.
Totally. So we had a couple people on the team. We would put that stuff in, and a lot of times, like the producers wouldn't even know that that stuff was in until the game was live.
You can't get away with that stuff anymore, right?
Is Lucasfilm here right now? No, like we run everything through. It's an honor system on our game, and I believe everybody told me everything that was in it. One thing that was really cool, though, is I think it was on the second date with my wife. We were at this bar in San Francisco here, a place called the Crowbar. I don't think it's around anymore, but there used to be this big arcade next to it. And after we left, we're going back to the car or whatever, I said, hey, let's stop here for a second. And went up to Gauntlet, and I put the thing in and put the code in, and she's like, that's you.
That's a nice move, man. That's not a lot of guys. That's an awesome flex right there. Yeah. Where you can just walk up and, hey, let's check this game out. We'll see what happens. And there you go. Was she impressed by that or just amused?
It's probably just amused.
All right. So back to God of War. At what point do you move up to art director?
Okay. Yeah. So after we finished God of War 1, I think it was right when we were in the midst of like, we're about to go on what we call comp time, whereas the company gives you a bunch of like kind of pay time off to make up for all the overtime that you were putting in. Right before that, we were basically down to our last bugs, and I was doing like kind of just Firewatch for some of the art, department, and, the executive producer on the project tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, how would you feel? Actually, I think she called me up on my phone from her office. So how would you feel about being art director in the next game? I'm like, yeah, that would be great. And it was kind of a career changing phone call for me, because I was already thinking about moving from California to, I was really interested in moving back to the Midwest and moving to Madison, Wisconsin. And I was going to start interviewing with Raven.
Okay. Yeah. But let's see. And what was that, early 2000s at that point?
So yeah.
Was that interestingly around Jedi Outcast?
It was probably around the same
right
time.
Around the same time?
Yeah, actually, I didn't even think about that. It was probably right before that. Or right after that. And I think after that, they ended up working on Wolverine, which is another
melee
action
super
game.
Good. Yeah.
My wife and I were planning on moving out there and just kind of getting out of California. I loved God of War and everything like that, but I think...
But you'd wanted to go to California.
I did. But at the same time, though, I missed, like... I mean, I think you talked about the weather before. Like, yeah. I like crappy weather. And when it's...
We only have, like, 1.5 seasons in California, at least in, you know, L.A., San Francisco.
Right. So I ended up... just taking the job as art director and never looking back. And that's... We started... Corey took over as game director on that, and we started working on God of War 2, a 2-year development cycle, which is tough, but it was a sequel, so we had a lot of our systems built and everything, and we weren't doing a console. It was the same console, so
yeah.
It was definitely doable. It was not easy by any means. It was tough for the team.
Was that the first sequel you'd ever done?
Well, technically, I'd worked on a couple of Gauntlets, but they weren't direct sequels, so yeah.
But you had done two games in a series. Was that the first time?
So yeah, it was.
I would imagine it's got to be interesting from an art perspective, because you can probably reuse some stuff, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
You know, character model, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we did end up redoing Kratos for PlayStation 2. Because we learned more about the system, and we learned more about, you know, kind of optimizing the technology. And we did that with a lot of stuff. I think we were able to, like, basically squeeze out as much power as possible on the PlayStation 2 on that game. Yeah.
Did that feel, like, that phone call, did it feel in the moment like you'd kind of reached a mountaintop in your career? Or was it just sort of... In the moment, do you just kind of feel like, oh, that's all right, this is just the next cool thing? Yay. Because that's a great moment from where you started of wandering, you know, of bartending, and then, you know, like, okay, I got to figure out what my calling is, and making your way across the country to art school. And now here you are, the art director on a major PlayStation franchise.
Yeah. I was shocked, because I wasn't expecting it. And... but at the same time, though, how do you turn that down?
Yeah.
How do you turn that, like, to your point? You know, like, it's especially, people were loving God of War. And, I mean, looking back at that now, I'm surprised that I was actually considering walking away from that, regardless to why. I mean,
what would the job have been at Raven?
I don't know.
You don't know. So you were just talking to them and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know that I, like, that was a long time ago, but I don't even know that I had even started, like, formal communication with them yet. Mm-hmm. But I know in my head, I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. I want to get kind of back to the, like, the basics of, like, kind of living in the Midwest and that kind of thing, and being in, like, a college town. And, like, I've kind of had my run of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I guess I was wrong.
It's still there.
Yeah.
You're still going. So, and then after, you know, two also hugely successful, which of the God of Wars do you have a favorite? Are you able to pick a favorite child?
I love them all for different reasons. I mean, I like the first one because, it reminds me a little bit of Jedi, that we were kind of building the plane while we were flying it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really know how it was going to land. Other than, like, when we went to E3, it's like, I think there's a lot of validation there that people were like, wow, this is a really cool game that you guys are working on. And, that made us feel good about, like, the final stretch to completing that game. So it was just, it was also like, I learned so much on that game, not only from a, you know, technical standpoint of just kind of the craft of being an artist, but like also like I was a lead environment artist. So I kind of learned a lot in terms, which I had been at Midway before, but this was just on a much different scale. I learned a lot about just management and, communicating and leadership. And, so that was a great game for me. God of War 2. There was towards the end of that game, I found myself driving home from work every night at like 2 a.m. and just yelling in the car. I'm like, how the hell did I get myself into this? Like, you know, because we were working so hard and I just felt like, there was like really kind of no outlet, that we just had to get it done. And that there was so much, there was such an incredible amount of pressure, but it was my first time being art director. I ended up taking on a level by myself while I was trying to art direct 50 people. And, which was just compounded things.
Sure.
But so I think that maybe that was probably my least favorite to work on, just because it was just so mentally demanding.
Yeah.
But it might be in the long run the most rewarding game for me, because it ended up kind of giving me kind of like from a leadership perspective, kind of the metal.
Yeah, it steeled you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also made me realize I don't want to be, I'm never going to put myself in that situation again. I did on God of War 3 end up building a level at the very end. but it wasn't as ambitious, and it was, the team was bigger then. So I think there was a little bit more, but God of War 3 was great. It was really rewarding. All those games are just really like a lot of, blood and sweat put into them. A lot of long, long, long hours. But with God of War 3, I ended up, that's when, my wife gave birth to our children. I have twins, a boy and a girl. And, that made me kind of like, all right, I have to kind of change my, focus a little bit now.
Yeah.
I can't be here until 4 a.m. every single night. And that.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Type of thing.
And on three, that's what you're humbly not saying. I'll say you were the game director.
Yes.
You become the game director on three. And what I want to ask you about, especially in light of your how you became art director for God of War 2, you were just given a surprise phone call that you weren't expecting. So it wasn't a thing you were vying for, clearly. So with three, what was the opportunity? Was that an opportunity you sought? Like, did you want to take that next step, or did it again kind of fall into your lap through the hard work and through opportunity?
Yeah, so for three, there was... Corey had been the game director on God of War 2, and for the first part of three, he was continued on as game director. And he ended up leaving pretty early in development, and it kind of happened out of nowhere. And the team was kind of caught off guard, I think, a little bit. Like, not caught off guard like we were put in a really bad place, right, or anything like that, but it's just kind of like, okay, how do we move forward? What do we do? And the head of the studio, you know, made an announcement, said, we're going to try to see if we can find somebody internally. If anybody's interested, come and talk to me. And if you have anybody that you think that is qualified for it, let me know as well, too. So I, especially after this kind of trial on God of War 2, where it kind of took me to the very edge, I was like, well, I think I didn't even consider myself. And I ended up throwing a couple names in the hat. And after like maybe a week or something like that, after the announcement was made, I was brought up to studio director's office and was asked, you know, what I thought. And I said, well, I gave the people that I thought would be the best choices. But to be honest with you, I wasn't sure like if anybody was like was ready to do it. Corey's great, and like, how do you step into
tough shoes to fill there?
And he said, well, what about you? And I'm like, I've really considered that. And he's like, well, a lot of people are saying that you should be the replacement. And it was kind of like that moment where I was asked if I wanted to be art director. I was like, oh, wow. And I went home and I talked to my wife about it. And it was, I think a lot of it was like, well, if I don't do it, who is? And I don't want to leave. I already like thought about leaving once.
Yeah, that ship sailed.
And now we're here. Now we actually own property here. Like, right. It's like not going anywhere. It's like we got ourselves in a situation. It's like, at least I know if I do it, I have a little bit of control over and this might sound selfish, but I have a little bit of control over the situation.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the fact that people had confidence in me and had mentioned me, and that like my name kept on coming up, made me feel a lot better about it. And she's like, sounds like you got to do it. So
that's great. I love that story. Now, after three, you didn't work on Ascension.
It's not true. I did work on Ascension.
You did work on Ascension. Okay.
A little tiny bit at the end.
Word is that you were working on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a project that never saw the light of day. I don't know if you can talk about it at all.
Probably wouldn't be professional for me to talk about it, but
it was
something that, I was very passionate about. People that I was working with on it were very passionate about. Yeah, I mean, I hope it gets made someday.
what's it like? I mean, is it fair to say that this was a canceled project?
Because
it didn't happen. So, I think when gamers hear that a game has been canceled, you know.
First game I ever worked on, by the way, they got canceled.
That's exactly what I want to ask you about what is a cancellation like from a developer's perspective? Because, you know, gamers think about it one way, like, you know, we don't want to see people lose their jobs if there are layoffs, and oh, that sounded like it could have been a cool idea. You know, we have the gamer perspective, but as someone who's right there and it was near and dear to you, can you kind of take it in stride, or does it take a while for the sting to wear off?
When it happened, I was pretty caught off guard. Like when all the good things happened, I was caught off guard. And immediately, I didn't even care about the game. I cared about the 40, I think it was 42 people that got laid off. That's all I cared about.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of them either. I felt like, you know, I was complete failure, and it was all my fault. And that was a tough project. And the reality is I could have bailed on it, but I didn't. I mean, when it actually happened, I didn't really think it was going to, but the last 6 months were incredibly difficult. And I always said, well, to myself anyways, it's like, look, I'm the director of this. I have a responsibility to the team. And if it's bad right now, if I just up and leave, I can't do that to the team.
Yeah.
And so I have a responsibility to stay, because if I leave, it's definitely going to fail. Who knows? Maybe I should have done that. But it was interesting because during that time is when I started talking to Vince.
Yeah.
He was interested in trying some new stuff. And I had known him through kind of like the game circle in Los Angeles area.
Sure.
And so it was when they did cancel the project, my phone, within an hour or two, Vince is calling up. And it's like, let's talk.
Do you have anybody that you can talk to when something like that happens, a cancellation like that? Are there sort of other people in the industry you talk to? Do you talk to your wife about that? Do you talk to like a therapist about that? Like, it sounds like there's a big emotional toll, particularly for you're the director on the project. It just doesn't sound like an easy thing.
No. I think, of course, I've talked to my wife a lot about it. Talked to my family about it. It was, coworkers, friends of mine that I'd worked with for years. I talked to them. Some of them were affected. A lot of them were affected by it. It's just a matter of getting through it. I think I got to that same point that I got after there was the layoff at Atari where they shut the studio down, and I went back into that mode. It's like, all right, I need to get a job right away.
Yeah.
Like I can't basically dwell on this. I need to, and the other thing too is I need to keep my, creative juices kind of going.
Yeah. So, all right. So Vince calls, he wastes no time. When he calls and you end up, obviously, it leads to you joining Respawn. Was it under the pretense of our corporate partners? They weren't owned by EA at the time, but like, we've got Star Wars in our back pocket, or did that come later?
You know, I think that there was a lot of, this is just from my perspective.
Yeah.
There was a lot of excitement about the Star Wars license, the brand and everything like that. And Vince was very interested in making a Star Wars game. And him and I were having conversations about that. And it's like, Titanfall's about to come out. I think people are going to be pretty excited about this. Might be a good time to start something new at the studio. What would you think about maybe pitching, to people at EA? Because we're good partners with them.
Yeah.
Remember, we're an independent company.
At the time, yeah.
Would you be interested in, taking a shot and seeing if we can get them behind doing a Star Wars game? And I was like, hell yeah.
So how's that go? That obviously goes well, but then you've got Lucasfilm to convince as well. So how did those meetings go?
Well, it didn't exactly go that way. It was a little bit more. Well, first I got to start at Respawn.
Yeah.
Okay, here I am. I'm the first person on this new team. Now we got to get something that we can get in front. If we want to really try to see if we can do a Star Wars game, we got to sell that idea to EA first. And I came up with like a one-page pitch or something like that. And we had a couple phone calls. And I think there was definitely interest on both sides, but planets didn't align. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the right time for both of us. So the plan B always was, if we don't do Star Wars, we're just going to start another team, because Vince was really interested in doing third-person action adventure games.
Yeah.
And I had been talking to him for a while just about, you know, how cool that would that be to do anyways. So plan B was, let's come up with a bunch of ideas for third-person action adventure games, start building our own IP, start building a small team. And we did that. And we ended up working on something else for a while. And that ended up, over time, things changed. The planets started to align with EA, and there was now an opportunity to do Star Wars. So we had to take that other thing that we were working on, kind of put it on ice. But I think a lot of the things that we were doing in there were kind of breathed the initial kind of life into Jedi. You know, like the very early pieces of code from our motion model, us learning how to use Unreal and all that kind of stuff. There's bits and pieces of that in there, and we'll always be there.
Are you willing or able to talk about what that other thing was? No.
I wish I could.
How about what was the one page pitch for Star Wars pretty similar to the game we have
no,
now?
No, actually it wasn't. It wasn't. And I think once again, there was something, probably a good thing, that we went through this, that we took the path that we did, because if they wanted to do that, I probably would have not been able to execute it on as well as we were able to execute on Fallen Order.
So, you know, you're moving forward on Jedi Fallen Order. The team's building, team's going.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the Lucasfilm part yet.
Oh, all right. Well, let's, before we get to that, do you feel any extra pressure during the development of Jedi Fallen Order? Because, you know, whether it's fair or not, EA has this reputation for, man, these guys never make, and they never follow through with single player narrative driven games. And here you are making one under the EA banner. Do you feel any kind of personal or team pressure to be like, man, we got to deliver on this to actually show everybody that, yeah, this can totally be done?
We never had those conversations internally. I think that there's a lot of noise, like after we announced and people knew what the game was and everything like that, that we had to stay focused. But like, that wasn't stuff that we were going to let kind of distract us, because we kind of knew exactly, we had a very clear vision of what the game was and what we were making. So, yeah.
Was there ever any, I find it interesting that Respawn and Jedi Fallen Order and Apex Legends and before it Titanfall are three of the only real major properties in the portfolio of at EA that don't run on Frostbite, you know, the company's sort of internal tech. And, you know, lots been written and said about that. Did EA ever say anything to you guys about, hey, maybe you should use Frostbite?
There was never a conversation.
Never a conversation.
There was, and keep in mind, with my team, same with the Titanfall / Apex team, it all predates the purchasing acquisition.
Yeah.
And even before we made our first hire on our team, I was already messing around with Unreal. Just I was the only person on the team.
Yeah.
Because it was like, is it going to be Unreal or is it going to be Unity? Because those were the only options at the time. And, you know, out of the box, I was just, you know, I was really impressed with Unreal. And, you know, they were very, you know, open to communication, having conversations and everything like that.
I've heard the tools are really good.
Yeah.
And the support's very good.
Yes.
With Unreal.
Yes.
And it's pretty flexible too, isn't it? I mean, we've seen it power a lot of different styles of game.
Yes. I can speak to the game that we're, in terms of flexibility, I can speak to the game that we're making, and it allowed us to empower the designers to do things that oftentimes you'd have to be like a senior engineer to do.
Yeah.
It's through visual scripting, we were able to get some rapidly prototype some pretty complex gameplay mechanics that, you know, down the road, a lot of that had to be rewritten. and optimized and streamlined because we were kind of doing it in a quick and dirty way. But there's nothing like being, a lot of times the hardest thing is, it's not a lot of times, it's every time, it's like finding out what the design is and finding out what the fun is. And the less barriers to that,
yeah.
I don't care if it's like, it's kind of janking and it's broken, but if you can project the way it's going to go, then we can hand that off to a coder and they can make it into a very elegant system.
So now take me back into the room with Lucasfilm. You've got, okay. You've got your idea. You've got, EA on board. How's it go when you're trying to pitch a Star Wars game?
So, it was a long time coming because we had internally agreed with Electronic Arts to work on a Star Wars game. Months before I actually got the date to meet with Lucasfilm. So I had really nobody to talk to in terms of, I think I talked to Amy a couple of times, when she was at Visceral, but I didn't have anybody, like any context of like, what is this process like? How does it flow? And what are kind of the expectations in terms of like, what we're allowed to do?
Yeah.
So we had several months before that. So we did a lot of research, played a lot of old games, Star Wars games that we had played in the past, but we tried to like get a little bit of a refresher on it.
Like what? What are some of your go-tos?
We played the Jedi Outcast, Jedi Knight. We played Knights of the Old Republic. Unleashed and
Force Unleashed,
too.
Yeah. What's your favorite Star Wars game ever besides the one
KOTOR.
You just made? KOTOR 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
That's without a doubt. I really like the game on the Super Nintendo though too. The side scroller.
Super Star Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
X-Wing versus TIE Fighter was really good too.
So good.
And Star Wars Arcade was really good, but so we did a lot of research. Then we also tried to like reboot ourselves as a team a little bit, like just because we're working on something different than we've been working on for the last several months here doesn't mean we should try to repackage what we were doing, because in order to do the respect that Star Wars deserves, we should really kind of do a thoughtful kind of like refresh and brainstorm to figure out, should we make a different type of game?
So did you kind of start over? Is that what you're saying?
We didn't start over. We just reset the conversation, and in a very healthy way. Like we started talking about making a game about flying spaceships around and like, or a shooter or something like
yeah.
that. And we ended up going back to something that we were kind of built for.
Like, well, you
action,
are.
Action melee combat. But like, that's kind of like what I do and what yeah. my team does.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going back to something like that had a lot of the principles that are in the game right now in terms of like Metroidvania as a big inspiration, and you know, kind of this idea of this growing hero, that, you know, you start small, David versus Goliath, you become something much more wise and experienced and powerful, and we got a lot of that on paper. And I think I once again, we did a one pager for this. I mean, some things actually that survived out of that one page was BD-1, the actual name BD-1
yeah.
survived. For several months we're working in a vacuum. Now it's time to come out to meet Lucasfilm and the Presidio up here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I get here, we had kind of like an idea of framework of what we wanted to do. And, it ended up becoming, I was just the only representative from Respawn. I went in a room and there was probably about 12 to 15 people there from Lucasfilm.
That's intimidating.
So I'm sitting at one end of the table and there's all these people around me. And I think we kind of had expectations of what we wanted to do more in terms of like, not exactly this is exactly where we want to go and where we want it to take place and where we want you know, the characters to grow and the abilities you're going to have and all those types of things. But we knew the spirit of the type of game that we wanted to make. So it was really just a conversation.
Okay.
And it was like, hey, what do you want to do? And we're like, well, this is what our background is. This is what we feel like we're going to be good at. And it's like, we want to make a game with Jedi and lightsabers and force powers. And I could feel that the room at the room kind of gasped for a moment. And, I mean, that's when I realized like Jedi are really big. I mean, of course they're a big deal, but it's a really big deal. Like, it's like the Holy Grail here.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of kind of people eyeballing each other, and somebody, I don't remember who, on the Lucasfilm side said, what about making a game with blasters? You know, something with, it's something more like a shooter. Yeah,
like Dark Forces.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't mention any games in particular, and I said, you know, I think part of my background is like Melee, and the team that we built is Melee Action, and I'm like, I think you wouldn't be really happy with the results of what we'd make for that, because I'm not super comfortable with doing that.
Right.
And I said, but, you know, lightsabers. And they talked a little bit more about it, and we went back and forth, and they said, here's the deal. We can pursue doing something with lightsabers and force powers, but we can't talk about Jedi. We've got to refer to them as force users. Okay. And I'm like,
all right.
As long as we got lightsabers and force powers, I'm cool. But it's crazy because that's the day that I learned. It's like every step of the way, we have to earn it. We can't just come in and say, this is the game that we're making. It's got to be a conversation. It's got to be a collaboration. And we have to earn the respect. And that works both ways. But here we are several years later, and the name of the game is Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, did the Order 66, did that sort of era, the time period stuff come later, or?
That didn't come out of that conversation. We talked about different time periods in that conversation. Order 66 did not come out of that. We walked away. I think I had a time period that I was interested in doing, and there was, for several different reasons, it wasn't a good idea. And we walked away. And my job was to basically answer a bunch of questions based off of, like, hey, these are the next steps. Is we need to answer some questions and resubmit. And one of them was time period. And I had in the back of my head, we can do Order 66. Order 66 will definitely work. But at the time, I don't believe we had that conversation in the room, but I think they were thinking the same thing. I think Lucasfilm was thinking the exact same thing. Because when I came back, I remember it was just like, yep, it totally, totally works. Totally makes sense. You know, like, remember I said, you know, it was important to us to have this character that's kind of growing from nothing to, you know, something. And that just turned out to be such a great time period to do that.
Was there ever any thought to doing dark side powers? Getting some, you know, force lightning.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of different conversations, and like in terms of like conversations and then actually doing are completely different things. But like we had conversations not about a character, not about Cal doing them, but the idea. I mean, that's what's fun. There's nothing better than going to Lucasfilm or Respawn and just sitting in a room with people and talking about Star Wars all day. And like, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Wouldn't it be cool if we could do that? And then just finally arriving at where you get.
So, did you have any trouble convincing Lucas that you were kind of making a Dark Souls game that was not going to be the easy? It was this, the game's no walk in the park. And this is a game that's going to appeal to a very, very mass audience.
I don't know that, like, I mean, we're a lot of different games, I think.
True.
And I think that was what, you know, there are bits and pieces here that we're inspired by one game or another. But, like, I think the thing that we all got aligned on is, like, this isn't going to be, the experience isn't going to be what most people are going to expect from a Star Wars
yes.
game. And there's this idea of, like, kind of the magic of Star Wars, that like almost anything can happen, and expect the unexpected, and just embracing this idea of Star Wars weird. And that's something, once we kind of got around that, it's like, yeah, but all these pieces are kind of cool together. It was more kind of like, yeah, we could nod to things that we understand them, because it's like, hey, it's like this thing that we saw before. It's like this other thing, but let's figure, then it just becomes the problem becomes, how do we contextualize and going back to the whole thing of earning it.
Yeah.
How do we get it to earn to be the right, essentially, to be in a Star Wars game?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite things about Jedi Fallen Order, is that it is like this amazing puzzle that fits together, you know, bits of Metroidvania and bits of Jedi Knight and bits of Dark Souls, and it all works together super, super well. And it's like, that's, I don't know how you guys pulled that off, but
I don't either.
It's crazy impressive. Did you audition a lot of actors before finding Cameron Monaghan for Cal?
Yeah, we went through several different sessions. I remember I wasn't really happy with just in general, just the performances that we were getting. We had some people that had really kind of cool charisma and cool looks and everything like that. But like, there wasn't, nobody was really nailing the performance because we wanted somebody that was very weary, very sincere, but also had this certain amount of optimism behind all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're casting and you're doing sides, it really takes somebody to be able to read through those and pull out like, something from inside them. And, we were getting a little frustrated, because it was looking like we're going to have to do another session. And we were going to have to do another session. And then our narrative lead, Aaron Contreras, started digging into some of the old folders of like, because we had folders that were like, view first. Casting director recommends you look at
these.
And we're super busy and there could be dozens of people that didn't make the cut for that in a casting session. And he just one night started digging through them and there was Cam. And as soon as he brought it up, I was like, well, I knew who he was. I was like, how is he not in the view first folder? Because he just had this charm and he had this thing. Like, I mean, I could tell right then, I think all of us could, it's like, he's going to take what's on paper right now. And he's going to like lift those words off of it and he's going to internalize it and he's going to do something even better with it. He's going to evolve it into something that we didn't even expect. And that's exactly what he did.
How about Deborah Wilson though? She's incredible.
We had already seen her in games. Yeah. And I think that we knew she was kind of, I don't know, as soon as I saw her, I'm just like, that's it. And she was in one of the first review folders. And I'm like, and I believe we were talking about Deb, like, right off the bat, because she'd had a history with our casting director.
So let me, a couple more questions, I'll let you go. You're not here for your health. You're promoting, of course, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which is out now for all PC, PS4, Xbox One. What to you has been the best part of working with Star Wars?
Man, there's so many of them, or so many different things. It's hard to really pinpoint anything down. I think, the thing that I find the most rewarding, and I kind of knew this going in, but once it really happens and you've got the game done and you see it, then it really hits home is just the wide band that it, if you're making Star Wars and people are watching or they get their hands on it and they love it, you can just hit so many people. And like, that's what everything that we do is all about. I always go back and say, it's like, we can't take what we do for granted. We've got an opportunity to put a smile on people's face. We've got an opportunity to make people cry. And, this is the largest audience. And I see it now that the game's out there and I see the reaction from the fans. And I see it in my kids and I hear it from other people that are, you know, over, you know, I don't want to say senior citizens, but like older people, it runs the gamut. It's amazing.
Are your kids rock stars in school? Because everybody at school is talking about Jedi Fallen Order, and it's like, hey, my dad made that.
I don't.
Come on.
I don't know. I don't know. I think that my kids are probably pretty humble and maybe they don't say anything. I don't know. But if they do, and like,
it'd be pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. I think I would want to brag that my dad made the game my friends are all playing. That'd be pretty sweet. Well, all right. You going to keep working on Star Wars? What's the plan? You want to stick with this thing?
Well, we're committed right now to like this game. And whatever it takes, you know, in the next several weeks, like we're having conversations like we are right now. And we're excited to getting more people's hands on it. But that's kind of where we're at right now. We don't really have anything that we can speak about today.
Well, the game's fantastic. Everybody here at IGN loves it. I love it. I got to finish the last hour or so of the game. These boss fights are no joke in this video game.
That's why we call them boss fights.
That's right. Stig, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome to represent the team. Hi, everybody. great work.
Thanks, Stig, and I hope you guys out there enjoyed that interview. For more interviews like that, check out more of IGN Unfiltered. New episodes drop every month. You can find them on YouTube, on IGN, or on your favorite podcast service.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.